Would anyone actually care if your business disappeared? On this episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast, we're going to talk about making a difference with John Mackey, founder and CEO of Whole Foods.
Hello and welcome to the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz, and I am talking today with John Mackey. He is the co-founder and CEO of Whole Foods. He is the author with Raj Sisodia of a new book called Conscious Capitalism. So, John, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thanks for having me on, John.
So, I've been in business a long time, and I think there was a period of time in my last 25 years or so where the words conscious and capitalism would have been seen as sort of an oxymoron together. First off, has that been your experience? And if so, you know, what's really changed to the point where people like you are writing books about this now?
I mean, I think, you know, consciousness is always on a continuum, so it's not like we're either conscious or unconscious. We are all hopefully a little more conscious today than we were a few years ago, and hopefully we'll be more conscious a few years from now than we are today. A lot of business is done with the principles that we talk about in the book, but they're done unconsciously. It's just good business practices. We think by making a lot of these good business practices more conscious, it'll help business. Business has such a bad reputation in the world that the enemies of business have basically been able to brand it as selfish and greedy and exploitative, and it's all he cares about money. And corporations are often seen as sort of sociopaths running around, running amok, need to be controlled. So business, though, of course, we think is a great value creator. It's, 200 years ago, 85% of the people alive lived on less than $1 a day. Today, that's down to 16%. The average lifespan was only 30. Today it's 68 across the world, 78 in the United States, and 82, almost 82 in Japan. And illiteracy rates were once over 90% 200 years ago. Now they're down to about 14% across the world. So, and I think this is largely due to capitalism. It's largely due to business's great progress that we've made. And, of course, business doesn't get credit for it. So we think that we can change the narrative. We hope we can change the narrative about business. And it starts with helping the practitioners of business to start thinking about what they're doing to become more conscious.
Yeah, and I guess that's really what I was saying, was that there was capitalism had such a sort of evil rap that using it in the terms of some consciousness as, you know, in a good way, putting those two together, I think, is something that people, you're right, don't necessarily think about. There's a line that I've heard you say, and it may actually be a direct quote from the book too, but the essence of business is basically based on voluntary exchange for mutual benefit. And I think that's a great starting point for thinking about what it is we're doing owning a business.
Yeah, well, that's what fundamentally makes business ethical. It's not based on coercion. Business is the great value creator, not for a few. Business is not a zero-sum game where someone wins and somebody else loses. That might be true for sports. It might be true for elections, but it's not true for business. In business, you create value for, it's all done voluntarily, for exchange, a voluntary exchange for mutual benefit. And a good business, a business like Whole Foods Market, it creates value for its customers who aren't forced to trade but have competitive alternatives down the street generally. And they do so because they like your combination of quality, service, ambiance, price, etc. You create value, business creates value for its employees. It provides jobs, it provides benefits, it provides opportunities to learn and grow and hopefully get promoted and to gain in responsibility over time. It creates value for suppliers. Everybody that trades with the business Whole Foods has about 100,000 suppliers, so we're creating value for all of them that trade with us. And it creates value for its investors. If it's successful, it takes their capital and multiplies it. And it creates value for the communities that we're part of, partly philanthropic, partly all the good things it does for the rest of those stakeholders, and partly because it creates the prosperity and the taxes that makes government go around as well. So it's a great value creator in that, and it's done ethically through voluntary exchange. unfortunately, business is often judged by its very worst actors, the Bernie Madoffs and the Enrons and the WorldComs, the Wall Street banks. People get the idea that business is to be judged by its very worst actors, which is odd. We don't do that for the rest of it. We don't do that with doctors.
Yeah.
We don't do it with journalists. We don't do it with architects or engineers or any of the other professions. But business is frequently attacked for the crimes of its worst practitioners.
Yeah, you know, I think it's funny, though. I mean, I do think that it's partly a mindset that you talk about, that everybody really needs to win in that sort of community, or you call them stakeholders, because I do think that there was a time when people looked at business as, you know, the customer's always right and everything else is serving that. And so does that mean beat up the vendors to get a lower price? Does that make your employees, you know, work themselves to the bone? And I think that ultimately what people are finding long term is that, you know, you get out of balance that way and nothing's really going to work. And I think that I'm very, very encouraged by the fact that more and more people are talking about purpose, and they're talking about, you know, what we stand for, and that everybody has to win. And I think that's the frame of mind that's changing maybe the conversation about what it means to own a business.
Yeah, and that's why we've written our book, to try to further that conversation.
So a lot of my listeners are small business owners, you know, maybe working by themselves, you know, 10, 12, 15 employees. And I think that this idea of purpose or understanding what you stand for and passion, you know, has really crept into the conversation now about business. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, particularly for the small business owner, the line between where their business ends and where their life starts is either non-existent or extremely thin. And so this idea of having a going to work every day for something that you believe in, I think is becoming more and more prevalent. But if I'm out there listening or certainly reading the book, you know, I've talked to thousands of business owners. It seems to be one of the hardest things for them to nail or to understand or to become very conscious about. You know, what is my higher purpose? Do you have any thoughts on how somebody actually goes about discovering that?
Well, oftentimes the entrepreneur or the founder or creator of a business has sort of they may not have made it conscious yet, but they oftentimes are motivated by a higher purpose. There's a difference they're trying to make in the world, some type of passion they have, some type of vision that they have about the way they could contribute, a business that will make a difference. And frankly, if they don't have that, if they're just some other, just a Me Too kind of business, they very well may not be successful over the long term. So asking that question, why does the world need our business? What difference are we making? Would anybody care if we disappeared? Are good questions to ask, and a good way to find purpose, if you're doing what we call a purpose search, would be to bring together your stakeholders or representatives from your stakeholders. Bring together some of your customers, and some of your employees, and some of your suppliers, and some of your owners or your investors, and together talk about why the business should exist, what difference it's making in the world, and together the stakeholders can. They'll all see a different part of the elephant, so to speak. But if they're together and they share their different perspectives, over time, if it's done skillfully, in a day or two, generally, that higher purpose will begin to emerge. If not, really, could emerge very quickly. But we found that the power of getting the whole system in the room is can be pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and I've discovered that too. I think a lot of times, business owners go out there and they just do what they see other people doing. They get up, they go to work, they do their, and they don't really think about this idea of purpose. But when they start thinking about it, and when they start, as you say, asking stakeholders, a lot of times they're working on a higher purpose. They're just not embracing it. They're not communicating it. It's there, you know, but yeah. It hasn't found them a lot of times. And I think that's
or it's found them, but they haven't, because they haven't made it conscious and explicit to the rest of the organization. They have that passion, but they may not be communicating it to their employees, and as a result, the business is optimizing. It's not reaching its fullest potential. So I think it's important that everybody in the organization understand really what the business is trying to accomplish, what difference it's trying to make in the world. That'll help align your employees and all your other stakeholders together, and it'll help the business optimize itself.
Well, I love that question. It's a painful one probably for some people to acknowledge, but what you just talked about a minute ago, the, you know, would it matter if we weren't around tomorrow? Boy, I think that can be a gut-wrenching question.
Yeah, it is an important question to ask. Who would care if we disappeared? And if the answer is really no one, then I would rethink the business.
Yeah.
I mean, think about Whole Foods Market. I mean, ultimately, when you get right down to it, we're grocers. And that's about as mundane a business as there is out there. And yet our business ripples with meaning and purpose because we've been able to conceptualize ourselves as now trying to help heal America. I mean, we've got a situation where 69% of the population is overweight, 36% are obese, and fully 80% of what we spend on healthcare costs in America come for diseases like heart disease, stroke, diabetes, cancer, autoimmune diseases that correlate very closely with diet and lifestyle. So by framing it up in such a way that we're trying to make a difference in people's lives and help them to be healthier and to live longer and avoid diseases, that creates a meaning and direction for everybody in the organization. And I think that helps people to be more creative, more innovative, to care more. Of course, it has to be an authentic purpose. You just can't make it up. It has to be something that really resonates with people or it won't be effective.
Well, and I think one of the ways to really measure that, and there are a handful of companies, Whole Foods certainly is on that list, that you can see it in every element of the business. It's not just on a plaque somewhere. It's in the people. It's in the customers. I mean, I'm a Whole Foods shopper, and I'm sure you've heard this before. Say we're at our essence, we're a grocer, but it's kind of a joyful experience to go to a Whole Foods and shop because the people that are certainly that work there, the products and you know the food that you're able to acquire, but just even the seeming attitudes of the people that are shopping there. I mean, it's just a different experience.
It is, and I do think that in a way gets back to not merely purpose, but the type of way we manage the business, the way we organize it, what our culture is, because culture is very important to create a conscious business. You can't just take that for granted.
You talk a great deal in the book about the role of the leader in this kind of business, because obviously I think that maybe the purpose or passion starts there, but then obviously you've got to be able to create that in other people. One of the things that I think a lot of people who are inspired by their idea sometimes struggle with is creating commitment in others. And what's some of your advice for if I don't see myself, and I hear this all the time, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm an idea person, I'm not a people person, and I have trouble sometimes inspiring or getting other people to commit to that. What's some of your thoughts about how you become this conscious leader as well?
Well, you have to grow as a leader. If you're not a conscious leader, then you won't have a conscious organization. It really does start with the leader. It starts with the CEO. It starts with the owner of the company. And I know in my experience at Whole Foods Market that my own failings and lack of consciousness in the past really held the company back. It wasn't until I was able to grow as a human being, as a leader, as a person, that the company also was able to grow along with me. So there's two possibilities, either grow or maybe you're not the right leader, because ultimately the organization can only go as far as the leader allows it to go.
What are you saying? You can't outsource this? No, I'm just kidding.
You cannot outsource leadership. Well, what you can do, of course, is you can bring people in that complement you. You don't have to be Superman. I mean, one of my talents as a leader, in a way, is knowing what I'm not very good at. There's some things I'm very good at and other things I'm not very good at. And I've tended to surround myself with people that in a sense, cover for my weaknesses with their own strengths. I really do believe in the team. And I think a big part of Whole Foods' success is that I've been able to attract and empower really talented people who are more talented than me in these a lot of crucial areas. So part of it's just having that self-awareness to know what you're good at and what you're not good at.
Well, that's interesting, because as I listen to you describe that, it sounds like a form of personal growth in itself.
It is a form of personal growth. Just asking those questions and being more self-aware is a type of personal growth, and it enables other growth to occur as you come to those realizations.
You talk about the role of mentors and coaches and role models. You want to, obviously, I think you believe in that as a very strong leadership growth tool. You want to talk about some of the coaches, mentors, role models that maybe helped you?
Sure. Well, I think for me, the one that helped me the most was my father. Because when I was in school, I didn't take any business classes. And I started the business when I was really young. And with really virtually no experience in business and no actual business courses. And of course, I did educate myself. I read hundreds of business books, actually, over the 34 years since I started the business. And I learned a lot. I also made mistakes and learned from them. But probably wouldn't have been, I might have wrecked the business in my foolish youth, except for my father, who was my mentor in business. He had been an accounting professor at Rice University in Houston for 19 years, and then he went out, hired by one of his clients, and went into business himself as a practitioner, ended up being a CEO of a public company before he retired. And he, from about 1978 to 1994, so that's a 16-year period, I really let him guide me and very seldom went against what he thought was best. And it wasn't until I got to be about 40 that I realized of course, by that time, Whole Foods had gone public, and it was in 1994, and he and I were beginning to have a lot of conflict and a lot of arguments about the direction of the business. He wanted us to play it very safe. I understood later that was because he was older, and he now had a lot of his net worth tied up in the business, and he was more concerned about holding on to it rather than losing it, so he didn't want to take the risk. But I was younger, and I really wanted to grow the business. So I ended up asking him told him the mentorship was over. I asked him to step down from the board of directors and told him that I was going to grow the business, and if he didn't like that or thought it was too risky, he should sell most of his stock, which is what he did. He just stepped down from the board, and he sold a great deal of his stock. And the good news there is we were able to repair our relationship, and I could still use him as an occasional consultant or resource, but I was then really on my own. But so there's a time to have a mentor, and then there's a time to outgrow your mentor. It's time for you to leave your mentor behind. And that's exactly what happened to me.
Yeah, every startup business owner needs one of those people that explains to them that you have to sell something for more than it costs you to make. That's really helpful, isn't it?
And even after that, even after my dad left, I've always been a consensus type of leader. So my team, we try to make our most important decisions by consensus. I don't simply just go order everybody around. Occasionally, I've gone against the team. Usually when I've done that, I've been wrong. But for the most part, I really try to make sure there's total buy-in and that we're all in agreement on the strategy and that we're all aligned together. I found that having that type of, they're not really mentor or coach, but they are people I trust. And I trust their judgment and their goodwill. And that really does help me and the company from making major mistakes, I think.
I interviewed any number of business owners recently over the last year that had what looked to me, at least outwardly, like very healthy cultures. The people were really jazzed to be there. And it seems like there are a handful of traits that, and I know you talk about them, you mentioned one, consensus, seems to be rampant in these companies, or at least a desire for it. Autonomy, in other words, not the typical hierarchy, transparency, trust, integrity. And, how do you necessarily, I mean, are there best practices to necessarily, I mean, it's one thing to have those as beliefs, but are there best practices that you've found that really kind of bring those to life?
Well, I can talk about some of the cultural elements that we find to be fairly consistent with conscious companies. And I mean, is that what you're wanting to know, or are you asking leadership?
I think you're on the right track, exactly.
Okay. Well, again, it depends upon the scale of the organization. And one of Whole Foods' secrets is we've always been fairly decentralized. And we decentralize into geographical regions, and then the stores they're linked together in a region, and they're linked together across the whole company, but they're individual business units. They have a lot of autonomy. And then within a store, we're organized into about 8 to 10 teams, like a grocery team, a produce team, meat team, and they're also fairly autonomous in the sense that they're self-managing. They make a lot of their own decisions. So they do their own hiring. They do a lot of their own merchandising. They make product selections, and they are rewarded collectively as a team when they achieve certain goals. The whole team is rewarded for achieving those goals on an equal basis. So what we found is that really empowers the team to be more innovative and creative. And we're a very experimental company, so we allow these teams to try things. And some of them don't work. Maybe even a majority of them don't work. But the ones that don't work, you just shut down. And the ones that do work, you spread. And so we decentralize, we empower, we experiment. That results in innovation and creativity, which helps push the company along. And then we have a culture of collaboration so that the good ideas are not locked up and hidden. They're seen by everyone else, and then the ideas are taken, and then they're improved upon in another store. And they can spread very rapidly that way. We give an example in the book about our store, one of our stores in Santa Rosa, California, now about 4 years ago, opened up a bar, and they called it a tap room, where they had 16 beers on tap. And they did it right in the beer and wine department. Now, when I first heard about that idea, I thought, that is a really stupid idea. They're opening a bar up in a grocery store, in a supermarket. Who the heck's going to want to go to a bar in a food store? It just doesn't make any sense. You want to have that at a restaurant or a standalone bar, neighborhood bar like Cheers. It turned out, though, it just exploded. And we saw very quickly, period of time, that little tiny bar in that beer and wine department was doing more sales than the entire seafood department was. And then that information, of course, began to circulate through the company. Without any command and control from Austin, Texas, we've now got, gosh, I guess we're probably pushing close to 100 bars now open just 4 years later. Some states we can't do it in, but some cities won't allow it. But wherever we can, we're either retrofitting or new stores are being opened up with it. And they're not the same as the original one in Santa Rosa. They've upgraded it. They've improved it. They've tried new things. So that's collaboration. That's experimentation at work. That's innovation at work. And it's also collaboration at work. It allows our company to continue to evolve at a rapid pace. We are never sitting still. We're always trying new things. And we're not punishing people if their ideas don't work, but we are celebrating their successes and spreading them.
So it's also sampling, I suspect. At some level, just because you've got a couple beers that you can try now, and then buy it and take it home.
It is probably true that if you've had a couple of beers, you may purchase things not on your list.
No. I think it probably also really taps in. I mean, my guess is one of the reasons it's been very successful is that first off, they're probably bringing in craft beers that people want to try, but also it's adding another sort of community element to going and hanging out in the store.
Yeah, an interesting thing we did that I think is very interesting was that originally the first one was set up, you know, selling beer, and we thought it would mostly attract guys, right? Big screen TVs, watch football, basketball, baseball games. But what happened is that as the concept evolved and some of the other stores did it, it's in these very open areas so that you can, it's traffic flows through there, you can see everybody. It's a very safe environment. And the interesting thing began to happen, sort of an unintended consequence, is that we had wine as well, and we began to see many more women start to show up and meet their friends there. And it's in Whole Foods Market. It's in this marketplace. It's in this well-lit, safe place. It's not in a little seedy bar that you feel trapped in. If a creepy guy comes up, he can't get away from him.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening was a lot of these bars or tap rooms ended up becoming with a lot more women in it than men. And, of course, as that began to happen, then more men started showing up.
Right.
So it ended up being very almost equal in terms of men and women. And when we started it, we really thought, or when they started it in Santa Rosa, that it was going to be primarily a guys thing. So it sometimes evolves in unexpected directions.
Yeah, that's very cool about trying things. You can do all the market research you want, but sometimes you just have to experiment.
The best market research is just to get in. I'm an entrepreneur. Get in and try things.
Yep.
And you test them out on a small scale and see what works. And oftentimes what you think might work doesn't work, but something you hadn't anticipated does work. And that's a lot of the best, if you study the history of innovation, a lot of the very best ideas that have ever happened kind of happened accidentally. They weren't what people intended that idea to be.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think so often, too, there are things that just take off and are brilliant that shouldn't work, you know, on paper sometimes. And I think that's what really holds people back, yeah.
It's really true.
Yeah. This is probably dangerous because we've covered a lot of really positive, upbeat things. I want to end on a more analytical note. One of my favorite, I've enjoyed the book immensely. You can get it, of course, Conscious Capitalism. You can get anywhere they sell books. I noticed you're also promoting it on Whole Planet Foundation. .org as well, but one of my favorite topics in the book was something you call systems intelligence, or SYQ, and I don't know if I can just lob it over to you and say, you know, maybe explain that concept, because I think it's a really important one for a lot of business owners, and so I'll just let you explain that concept. It's probably one of my favorite topics in the book.
Sure. First, I'll comment. I think one of the reasons the Whole Planet Foundation is promoting it is because not only are all my royalties being donated to the Whole Planet Foundation or being paid directly to the Whole Planet Foundation, but the company itself, Whole Foods Market, when we sell books in our stores, we're not making any money on those books. That's also being donated to the Whole Planet Foundation. So Whole Planet Foundation is very much wants our book to be a bestseller because they're getting paid for it.
Yeah.
Systems intelligence is basically... think of it, first contrast it with analytical intelligence, which is what IQ tests measure. IQ tests, they are able to see how things divide up. If first year in medical school, the first course that you take is a gross anatomy, where you take a cadaver and it's over a whole year period, you sort of slowly dissect that cadaver and you see how the bones fit and the muscles and the blood vessels and you understand it by taking it apart. Well, systems intelligence is kind of the opposite of that. It sees relationships that exist between things, and they see the complexities in the relationships, because not only the problem with obviously a cadaver was dead, you can't see the fact that there are 100 trillion cells in a living body like mine or yours. There's 100 trillion cells, which is an unbelievably number of cells, and they're all in a sense, in a healthy person, they're cooperating together, right? To for our lives to be alive, is this cooperation with all these cells is going on. So there are all these amazing relationships in our bodies between the nervous system and the brain and our hearts and our lungs and our bones and our immune system and everything that comprises our bodies. It's really quite amazing and astounding. And health, in a way, is having that operate in a harmonious way. So to understand health, you have to understand the relationships that exist between things like what we eat and how that affects us, and our exercise and positive thinking and virtues such as forgiveness and generosity and love, and how they affect our health and well-being. So systems intelligence is able to see those relationships. In a complex business like Whole Foods Market, the relationships that exist between all the stakeholders, for example, are very important to see. And we talk in the book about how you needed to manage the business or lead the business in terms of the whole business system, that if you try to just optimize one thing, such as, well, we're just going to maximize profits, but you don't understand the relationships that exist between the customers and your employees and your suppliers and the investors, then you'll probably will sub-optimize that system and you will underperform your even your economic goals. So the relationships that exist are essential, and that type of intelligence I have found to be incredibly valuable in business. It's really one of the reasons that I think Whole Foods has been so successful, is that we've had the ability to see the system and manage the system so that every part of the business will flourish. Our customers will flourish, our employees will flourish, our suppliers flourish, our investors flourish, and our communities flourish. And that's what conscious business is. It's, in a sense, helping all of those to flourish.
Well, and I think it starts with a mindset, though, right? Because you have to be asking yourself, well, if we do this decision, if we expand here, if we open bars, you know, in a sort of, how does that impact everything else? And I think that...
That's right. What exactly? How does this affect all the stakeholders? And if it's harming a stakeholder, if there's a trade-off, then perhaps it's not the right strategy. You have to come up with another strategy that where it's a win-win-win-win strategy where everybody can win. And if somebody's losing, if someone has to sacrifice, then maybe you haven't thought hard enough or haven't been creative enough to come up with the win-win-win strategy.
And I like your advice. I mean, talk about looking at other models for really an illustration of how this system thinking kind of works. There's a brilliant book that was written by an architect probably 30 years ago called The Timeless Way of Building. I don't know if you're familiar with it. He basically goes about how a community is built and how it impacts, you know, everything from a sidewalk to, you know, where the auditorium is, you know, how it impacts every piece of the puzzle. And I think it sometimes getting outside of business literature and your sort of common industry, I think, is one of the greatest ways to get some experience about things like this system thinking.
John, what's the name of that book? Timeless?
The Timeless Way of Building.
Timeless Way of Building. Thank you. I will check that out.
Yeah, and it's you'll be able to find it somewhere. Like I said, it's been out. You probably have to order it online because it's about 40 years old maybe, but it's really a neat book. Well, John, thank you so much. I know you've got a busy schedule both in running that little business that you run and then now as a bookseller out there. So I appreciate you taking the time to stop by here and really, really a great book, a great contribution to really any size business in terms of how they can come to view and look at their business.
Thank you so much, John. I appreciate having me on. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.